Hi, everybody. My name is Mandy Rambros. I have the privilege of working at ESCOM. I'm the general manager in the office of the group chief executive and leading the Just Energy Transition program. I'm looking forward to talking to all of you.
The role of women in the energy sector is not to be underestimated, nor is their contribution to multi-million dollar utilities across Africa. During this series of Women in Energy podcasts, we're going to be speaking with a number of leading women in Africa's energy sector, showcasing their influence, the unique elements they bring to their jobs, and provide a little insight into the woman behind the job. Hi, I'm Claire Falkveen, your host for today's episode. Today, we're talking to Mandy Rambaras, who is the General Manager of the Just Energy Transition Office at ESCOM. Mandy, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Claire. Thank you for having me on your show.
I do have to ask, what is the Just Energy Transition Office and what is the mandate that your office has?
Thank you, Claire. I think the just energy transition is something that is on top of mind for most people at the moment, not just in South Africa, but the world over. And basically what it is transitioning away from fossil fuels into cleaner fuels. And from an ESCOM perspective, the mandate of this Just Energy Transition Office is to drive ESCOM's transition towards a low carbon, socially inclusive future, to pursue our net zero goals, net zero of emissions, that is, to increase jobs and to stimulate economic growth. So, yes, a number of huge ticket items, but something we're really excited about working on.
Mandy, if I could ask, I mean, what do you see a just transition looking like? I mean, you've mentioned a lot of things, transition to renewable energy, access to energy. But, I mean, what does that mean in reality?
So in reality, it sounds like a bit of a utopia, and I would like to think that that is something we should strive towards and not a pie in the sky kind of thing. But a transition basically means that you are looking at new ways of producing electricity in our case and transitioning away from the old ways of doing things. You know, not that there was problems with the way that the old way of doing things helped our economy grow. But, you know, as you grow in knowledge, you also grow in understanding of the impacts of what you do has on people, on society, on health. And we found over the years, of course, that burning fossil fuels has had a negative impact, not just on the environment, but on society and on the economy. So in terms of transitioning, what it means is that we transition away from the old way of doing things to a new way of doing things, so that you end up with a society that is thriving, that has clean, sustainable electricity, that sees a number of opportunities in this transition, and that can grow. And for me, that's what a just transition looks like. It is a utopia, and it is something we should be striving towards.
I know that, one of the big concerns around a transition is loss of jobs, increased cost. Is this something that ESCOM is looking at addressing through your office?
Absolutely. It's one of the main pillars of what we're doing in terms of a just transition. I often say that you can't separate the terms. Yes, we need to transition towards new ways of doing things, but doing it in a just way is as equally important as the transition itself. And just meaning exactly that. How do we deal with job losses? How do we deal with costs, with affordability, so that we don't just transition in an irresponsible manner, but we transition in a way that's just to society and to all of us? What we are finding in the work we're doing, and we're not just saying this from rhetoric or from gut feel, but we're actually putting in some real deep modeling work behind this, with modeling with real data, to say, what is the opportunity for us to transition? What does it mean in terms of jobs? What does it mean in terms of costs? And what we're finding, Claire, very interestingly, is that a transition pathway towards new cleaner technologies such as renewables is actually a least cost pathway. It's cheaper than investing in new coal, for example. And what we find is that there are numerous opportunities along that value chain. So it is so integrated and so interesting that if we transition as a country towards renewables and we committed to this pathway, we then open up the opportunities for a local manufacture of components in our country. We open up the opportunity for redesigning the way we do trucking. If we open up this opportunity for renewables businesses, we're also looking at the knock-on impacts on transmission infrastructure. If you build thousands of kilometers of transmission lines to evacuate that power, it also means more concrete, more steel, more copper, more aluminium. And the number of jobs that we can create along this value chain is staggering and shows you the opportunity that we have. So I think that is where I'm seeing the opportunity. And it's not just an ESCOM opportunity, it's a country opportunity, a national opportunity for businesses along the value chain, communities in where we operate, and for new young people coming into the workplace to find much more exciting, interesting ways of career paths as well.
It sounds fabulous. You would need to, I'm assuming, look at reskilling. I mean, is that something that your office is thinking about in terms of how you reskill some of your existing labor force?
Absolutely. So when we look at what are the pillars of the just part of the just transition, one of them absolutely is reskilling. So particularly where you are, in a way it's obvious, you can reskill the higher skilled workforce, for example, engineers that run a steam turbine on a coal plant, would need a bit of reskilling to then run wind turbines or to run other parts of the plant that are not linked to coal generally. But I think what's very important is how then do we deal with staff that are unskilled, with the unskilled labor along the value chain. And I think that's particularly important in the coal mining industry. So we're working collaboratively with others. Like I was saying earlier, it's not something we could do on our own. Mm-hmm. But we're working with other mining companies, with the Minerals Council, to look at what opportunities are there to reskill people. And Claire, the reality is that some people are unskilled because they didn't have the opportunity, be it financial or whatever circumstances, that they weren't able to study. And so we're also looking for those opportunities where people now have the opportunity to study, to reskill themselves, to do something different. So that's definitely a huge part of the strategy. It's part of the success of the strategy going forward.
So this is a strategy that really could, I mean, change lives, you know, not just because of the fact that we are looking at a new way of producing energy, but we're actually looking at bringing people along with that transition.
Yes, and I think that's where we need to look at changing mindsets, where we need to look at the opportunities. You know, change is not easy for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think when you talk about transitioning new ways of doing business, we need everyone to see the opportunities in that. You can't move on to a new pathway if you don't leave behind the old pathway. But we need to show that the new pathway has these opportunities. So I think that's an extremely important thing that we need to do going forward with the transition.
Very profound. You have to leave the old pathway in order to forge a new one.
Yeah.
Can I perhaps ask if you could share some of your ideas and potentially the challenges when it comes to the just transition?
So I think it's what I've alluded to already. It's around mindsets. I think one of the biggest challenges is that, you know, you have you find comfort in where you are, right? That is why it's called a comfort zone. And what we're talking about is actually completely changing our business model for the country. It's changing the way we do business. Our economy has been built on coal, built on fossil fuels for many generations. And we need to pay tribute to that heritage. But as I was saying earlier, you know, we've found that there's problems with that way of doing business, and we need to transition to a new way of doing business. So I think the biggest challenge is, mindsets. How do we do things differently, but making sure that we're not leaving people behind, we're not losing jobs, we're also talking about making sure that things are affordable. There's obviously the obvious challenges around financing. Transitioning will require us to have the money to do it, not just from an ESCOM perspective, but from a national perspective, building up the skills, ensuring we have the local capacity to do things. So those are challenges that are easy to deal with. And I'm by no means being glib about them. when I say easy, is that there are known solutions. Mm. I think the biggest challenge is the mindsets and making it clear that, you know, this transition actually leads to new opportunities. And that is where we need to place the most emphasis on how do we change mindsets and how do we give people the level of comfort that this transition will actually be a positive thing.
Shifting focus just a little bit, what advantages do women have in a male-dominated industry, particularly when it comes to ways of handling business culture or planning or processes?
So I think, you know, to be honest with you, Claire, I'm not so sure if it is gender-related or personality-related, you know, because I find that what you need to do, and maybe perhaps this is where it comes in, that women traditionally, and you would know this as well, being a woman handling many things in your life, I think traditionally we are able to manage a number of challenges at the same time. And no, I'm not being disparaging to our male colleagues as well. I know there are lots of males that are able to manage many things at once as well. But in terms of seeing how these different challenges play out and how you juggle different things together while still keeping your eyes on the prize, you know, keeping your eyes on how we move forward and not being not finding yourself being debilitated by the challenges you face, is something that I find women handle very well. And I think, you know, from that perspective, there are also men, of course, that do that. But what I think we need to do when it comes to our industry is that we need to give women the opportunity and not put them into a box of saying, oh, you're a woman, so maybe you can bring the softer side into this project. Or you're a woman, so maybe you'll understand people better. I don't think we must be put into that boxes, but you must see a woman for the value that she has, for the opportunities that she can bring without putting her into a box. So I think first and foremost, we need to ensure that women are not stereotyped and that we are given the opportunities where you would, you know, your probably your unconscious bias is to say, actually, this might be run better by a man, is to put that aside and say, let me give a woman the opportunity.
It's a really important point that you raise. I guess the thing is that very often you're not even aware that it is an unconscious bias, that, you know, having grown up in what is a fairly conservative society, really, we do still have a bit of that, oh, well, this is a man's job and this is a woman's job. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's about us actively challenging those stereotypes within ourselves as well.
Absolutely. And I think part of the challenge we have as women is that it's an ongoing battle. It's not going to be won overnight. It's not going to change in one generation. It is an ongoing battle, and we have to keep fighting the stereotypes.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you're probably right about that. It is an ongoing battle. But as a woman leader, what do you believe your role is? I mean, particularly in a business like Eskom, which is incredibly male-dominated.
I think, you know, actually Eskom, if you look at the Eskom profile, I think we're doing really well compared to some of the other businesses in the country in terms of women in leadership roles. Often when I go to meetings, I am the only woman. And it's the other companies, I think, that could perhaps learn a thing or two there. So if I could just put a plug in there for Eskom in terms of its transformation efforts. I think I believe my role is to uplift other women. You know, we need to be very clear that women bring a special quality in terms of we are able to manage various challenges, like I was saying, and not to be stereotyped into certain roles that you are meant to do in a business. When I say uplift other women, and I don't mean at the detriment of our male colleagues at all. I mean in that, you know, we were just saying that it's an ongoing battle, is that when you walk into a room as a woman, you immediately at a disadvantage because people see you and say, oh, there's a woman. I wonder if she got this job because she's a woman. And, you know, you imagine these things going through people's minds. So for me, I think as much as I can, I uplift other women. And I think that is our role as women going forward. And when I say, you know, I just want to emphasize that it's not at the detriment of male colleagues. But when you see a woman that excels, but is not necessarily given the opportunity or put onto a platform for her to show her excellence because she's a woman, then it's our job to uplift these women. To say, you know, have you considered her? She's excellent at this. She's well-spoken. She's she shines at her job. And give her the platform. You know, so I think that is our role as a, as women leaders to continue to do that.
I guess it is, again, as you were saying, fighting those stereotypes, but also as a woman, believing that you deserve your seat at the table.
I think it's also a particular role along the lifetime of a woman, right? It's not just when you enter the work environment that you suddenly feel like you're less. It's everything around you growing up that makes you sometimes put yourself into a box. You know, somebody asked me once, how come I have such a rebellious streak? And I say, you know, I think if I sit down and think back on it, I think my dad nurtured that. I argued with him a lot and he allowed it. And you know, that was to my benefit, to be honest with you. Mm. But how many people or how many women growing up feel that they should be seen and not heard? And hopefully, you know, over time, as we've become more progressive as society, that has changed. But you find it every now and then when you find yourself listening in on a school lesson, or you find yourself in a shopping mall, or, you know, you still see these stereotypes coming out about girls versus boys. Mm-hmm. And that is where it needs to change. And when you get into the work environment, you must already be there knowing that you deserve that seat at the table. And not questioning yourself. It's a confidence that we find generally in males. It's a confidence we need to nurture in females.
Well, it sounds to me like you were incredibly lucky to have the father that you had. And well done, sir.
Yeah, choose your parents wisely.
Exactly. Exactly. For, I mean, you know, as much choice as you have in the matter. Mandy, can I ask, who is your inspiration? And I mean, this can be personally or within a work environment, but I mean, who is somebody that really inspires you?
You know, there's a number of people, Claire, and it's people who have the same underlying quality. That is people who overcome the odds, who have particular disadvantages, but they pursue the very thing they believe in and succeed. So for me, that's the underlying quality of people that I really admire. And there's a mixed bag when I look back, and you know, some of it might sound a bit morbid to you, but I honestly admire people like Vincent van Gogh, like Beethoven, Nelson Mandela, you know, Elton John, Eliud Kipchoge, the Kenyan runner, Freddie Mercury. If you look back at their lives and the advantages, disadvantages, and odds they had to overcome to pursue something they believed in. And, you know, coming through that in their lives is pretty amazing. Those are the type of people that I really find inspirational and I really admire. And I must say, more recently, is our new chief executive, Andre de Ruyter. I think he's inherited an organization that has came with a lot of baggage, a lot of challenges. And he just keeps pushing through, overcoming the odds you know, taking it on the chin and being visionary despite some of the naysayers. So I think those are the kinds of qualities I really admire in people. And then if you read the biographies of people like Michelle Obama, like Hillary Clinton, you know, women that also had to overcome these particular odds, but then the added disadvantage of being a gender stereotype and what they came through has been pretty amazing as well.
Well, it certainly sounds like a very impressive list of people you know, definitely people on that list that I myself have looked at and thought, you know, you're an inspiration. And of course, you know, a lot of those people have also spoken very much around the fact that none of this has come easy. It's taken hard work and dedication. They haven't landed with a silver spoon in their mouths. They've actually had to work for whatever advantages they now appear to have. Can I ask, what book are you reading at the moment, and what lessons are you taking from it?
So I think it might be, again, I might come across as very morbid. I promise you I'm not. But the book I'm reading at the moment is called Leadership in War, a book by Andrew Roberts, who's an amazing author. And it's basically about lessons from those people who made history. So I love reading about history. And it's about people like Dwight Eisenhower, like Winston Churchill, that led different countries during the wars. And what lessons can you take from that? So it's not necessarily about war strategy in just looking at it coldly, but the way you deal with strategy, the way you deal with challenges that seem impossible, where you have so many boxes to tick. I have to take care of the population. I have to take care of the economy. We have a war that we're fighting. We have people that we are losing. And the way they took decisions is actually quite intriguing in this book.
I imagine that that's actually a really interesting perspective. And, you know, at the end of the day, the art of war wouldn't be as popular as it still is if there wasn't perhaps a little bit of a parallel between war and business. So perhaps not so morbid after all.
The things that you see in the book is how they use the strengths of the team. And it's not just about me as the leader taking the decisions, but actually listening to my team. And that is what the leaders like Dwight Eisenhower did so well, is listen to those who were more experienced than him or had more of a knowledge than him in certain areas. They listened to the team.
I think that that can be one of the hardest things to do, especially if you come from that kind of environment where the implication is that as the leader, you should know everything. And then
exactly,
you know, being the person to say, I don't know what to do here. So what do you think? And trusting your team. I think that that is a hugely important lesson for all of us to learn. As leaders, we don't need to know everything, but we do have to trust the people that we surround ourselves with. Mandy, what message would you like our listeners to take away from this discussion?
Well, Claire, you know, you just asked me about what book I'm reading at the moment. The book that I keep, so that's the book I'm reading at the moment, but my go-to book that I keep going back to and just paging through it again is a book called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which is it's his experience being a Jew during the war and his experience of the Holocaust. And it's a pretty amazing book. And when I think about what message I would like people to take away, it's about living purposefully. And, you know, there's a passage in this book, if you allow me just to read it very quickly. It says, don't aim at success. The more you aim at it and make it a target, the more you're going to miss it. For success, like happiness, cannot be pursued. It must ensue. And it only does so as an unintended side effect of one's dedication to a cause greater than oneself, or as the byproduct of one's surrender to a person other than oneself. So living purposefully is something that I try and do every day in my life. And it's something I think I would like people to take away from this, is that you don't aim for success. You don't aim for happiness. It comes from you living purposefully and being committed to a cause.
I have read Man's Search for Meaning, and it really is about the triumph of the human spirit. So really well chosen book there. And last question, if I may. If you had a group of young women in front of you who were wanting to get into engineering or the power sector, what would you say to them?
I would say, well done on being here and taking on this challenge. I think we need more and more women in the STEM, STEM way of doing things. Mm-hmm. I would say, don't limit yourself by what society expects. There is no glass ceiling. The sky is not the limit. You can go into space and be an astronaut too. And to be true to yourself, you know, don't think that you need to behave like a man to get ahead in this world. Be true to who you are. And don't think of glass ceilings and limits. I also think that it's extremely important to be mentored. One of the challenges we have with some of the younger people is perhaps being on a little bit too much of the side of we know better. So I think also be honest with yourself and understand when you need help. And mentorship has helped me in my life. It doesn't have to be a female mentor. You know, you can have mentors along your life that really help you. But I would recommend speaking to other women. Ask them the experiences. Ask them what they've learned in life that has helped them get to where they've gotten to. And don't allow yourself to be boxed in. But I think, you know, for me, the two main things is don't limit yourself by what society is expecting and be true to yourself.
Very powerful messages there. Anything else that you'd like to say, Mandy, before we wrap?
I think, you know, Claire, for me, I think I've been so privileged and advantaged to be in a job that is a passion for me. So the just transition and moving our society towards one that is cleaner, that is greener, that is more sustainable is actually a passion for me. And so maybe it comes from a point of saying I am in a space, and like you were saying earlier, these things don't fall into your lap. You work towards it, right? Mm-hmm. But your job mustn't be a job. It must be a passion. I mean, it becomes a passion when you live purposefully in that respect, in all aspects of your life. I think you will find how things unfold. And so I think for me, it's be passionate. Be passionate about what you're doing, and you know you will find happiness and you will find success.
Well, Mandy, thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your thoughts on not only the role of the just energy transition in South Africa, but also the role of women in South Africa's power and energy industry. Thank you for joining us on this Enlit Africa podcast. This episode is brought to you in partnership with ESI Africa. For more podcasts, you can visit the Enlit Africa website at enlit-africa.com or visit the ESI Africa website, esi-africa.com. Be sure to tune in again for more conversations and insights into the things that really matter to Africa's energy industry. Until next time, I'm Claire Falkveen, and you've been listening to the Woman in Energy podcast.